Hi, I'm Aaron Mee, inviting you to tune in for Community Matters on Sunday morning starting at 8:30, brought to you by Lakeshore Community Services. Join us as we talk through issues that matter most to you right here in Warren. 8:30 a.m. Sunday morning, brought to you by Lakeshore Community Services on the greatest hits, 92 Gold.
This is Community Matters on 92 Gold. If it matters to you, it's on Community Matters.
Great to be back and great to be sort of talking about some of the things going on in PA, because there are certainly a lot right now. It's been very sort of busy, almost a continuation from 2021. I think I said previously, Pennsylvania sessions, you know, they're 2 years. So the current session is, you know, the 2021-22 session. So it's sort of just a big carryover from last year, from 2021. So we're looking at a lot of the same issues, you know, a lot of the same things that lawmakers have been talking about. But of course, now, you know, we have the primary elections coming up in just about a month, you know, 5 or 6 weeks from now. So that's really made things very interesting. I've gotten to speak with a lot of candidates running here and for some of these highest offices in PA, lieutenant governor. Governor, there's a pretty crowded field, at least on the Republican side. So it's going to be a very interesting primary. And I think we're going to be able to find out a lot as far as what these candidates stand for, what their vision is for PA, and, you know, ultimately who the best candidate will be heading into November for the general.
There's a few other things that are going to be really interesting that we can discuss with this too, because I'm excited to be able to also get a little bit of an idea as to some of the things that were on the legislative palette for last year and seeing what they worked on last year that they're going to try to move forward with this year, what they've got planned. And then also with the things that have happened as of recent and the events that are going on, you know, between Russia and Ukraine right now, obviously everyone's feeling that squeeze at the pump right now. And being the Keystone State here, this was a great opportunity, and we have great opportunities here for production of this stuff on our own land. I'm curious to see if anybody is going to be pushing in the state representatives as far as trying to get more of that happening here as well.
Yeah, and you really kind of hit it on the head. I mean, especially since all this stuff has been going, this conflict has been happening, unfolding in Ukraine, there's been a lot of calls to really vamp up Pennsylvania energy production, especially among Republicans and even some Democrats. You know, obviously Democrats have been fighting for for different climate solutions and energy, you know, green energy, that kind of thing. We hear a lot about the regional greenhouse gas initiative, which the Senate actually voted to override just last evening. So we're going to see what happens with that. But basically what that is, it's the coalition that Governor Wolf was trying to get Pennsylvania in. And it sort of is a coalition of these northeastern states that sort of sets goals for carbon emissions, almost like a cap on carbon emissions. So Democrats kind of have their hands tied, because obviously with all this happening in Ukraine, it's terrible, and nobody wants to be sort of fueling Russia, fueling this conflict. And at the same time, you know, the next option as far as not producing it in here in the United States would be going to places like Venezuela or other places in the Middle East. And frankly, from what a lot of Republicans are telling me, that's no better. You have these countries like Venezuela who don't really have a big respect for human rights and all these other types of structural issues with how the countries are run and that kind of thing. So, you know, Republicans say they don't really want to be, obviously, they don't want to be sort of funding these countries and these authoritarian nations, et cetera. So they really want to start ramping up production here in PA. So we've heard a number of different bills in the House, especially among, you know, the House GOP caucus, things like being able to sort of drill under state lands. That's something that Governor Wolf overrode. So he basically said, we can't drill on state lands, we can't drill underneath state lands. And now there's this bill that would sort of, I don't know if you're familiar with horizontal drilling, but it would sort of, it's a subsurface, subsurface drilling. So it would sort of drill down away from state lands and then sort of horizontally underneath into state lands to capture those resources. Because from what folks tell me, there's so many resources. And when you look at the state game lands or these parks, there's an abundant amount of natural gas that could be used for a number of different energy production
you're limiting the cap as to what you are going to allow for CO2 emissions and stuff like that. But then also you might have to raise that cap if you're going to plan to do this. Now, like you had said, there's going to be a large field of candidates up for, you know, election this year. One thing that I'm curious to hear about is, you know, in the field of them, do you think that people are starting to take different views and strategies as far as this stuff goes, or is everyone kind of towing the same line?
Yeah, that's a great question too. And you know, obviously with this election, there's especially looking at the governor's race for governor, there's a very crowded field of Republicans compared to Democrats, who was really, you know, they'd have Josh Shapiro as sort of their main guy. And as of this point, there's no other Democrats who are running for the highest office in Pennsylvania. But it's interesting because over the last month or two, you're absolutely right. A lot of these candidates have been sort of, you know, taking different stances on things like the gas tax. Everybody is really for energy production. Everybody I've spoken with, all the candidates know that Pennsylvania is what they say it's, you know, we're sitting on a gold mine as far as what we have beneath our feet. And they know that, and they really want to ramp up production here in PA. So that's pretty, you know, that's among all those GOP candidates. But the one thing that's interesting is looking at gas prices, things like the gas tax. I had a special report maybe about 2 weeks ago on the gas tax, where we looked at sort of the revenue that was being collected by the state, where it was going. Not, you know, a decent amount of it was going to other different state agencies and things like that. Not as much to roads and bridges like it was originally intended. And so it's interesting to hear what these candidates have to say, because, you know, some want to completely eliminate the gas tax. Others want to cut the gas tax by maybe, say, like 30% or so. Others, and I know on the Democrat side, Josh Shapiro even suggested putting giving a $250 gas tax rebate to families. So for families that have up to four cars, you'd get $250 per car, up to, of course, four cars to sort of offset those gas tax, because, you know, they say it's important for the maintenance and construction of roads and bridges. Obviously in Pennsylvania, we have a lot of bridges and roads that are in very rough shape. You know, that's no secret. PennDOT's got a lot of roadways and bridges to maintain, and they have an annual budget deficit of about $8 billion. And that's annual, that's each year. So there definitely, you know, there definitely needs to be some thought into that as to how, you know, where can the state make some additional alternative revenue? And that's a whole nother deal that they've been trying to figure out different ways, like, you know, bridge tolling.
I was going to say, they're doing that. There was a proposed idea for that to the south of here, right?
Yes, on I-80, I believe. And that was the, I'm trying to think of the name of that bridge.
It's near Cambridge Springs, I believe.
Yeah. And that's one of those, I believe, those nine candidate bridges that PennDOT was looking to toll to sort of pay, basically, almost as a mortgage to pay off the construction of those bridges. So essentially what they would do is they'd have a private contractor come in through a public-private partnership, P3 initiative is what they call it. They'd have a contractor come in, you know, whether the bridge needs to be completely, I think those candidate bridges are going to be completely rebuilt. So they're going to have these companies come in. You know, some of these bridges are anywhere from $40 million to about $600 million, $700 million estimated construction costs. So they're going to basically start tolling people on these bridges to pay off the price of the construction of that bridge, kind of like a mortgage over a 30 year period.
That's really interesting. And, you know, especially when you look at the bridge collapse that happened in Pittsburgh, it gives you a really good indication as to, you know, some of the condition as to what these bridges are operating in. And obviously, if you see the statistics and stuff that PennDOT sends out, and you see the list of the bridges and the amount that are in a level of disrepair that could use help, it really does make sense to have those added in. But, you know, I know one thing that a lot of people are thinking about when you see these tolls put in place and stuff like that, and I know this might become a level of contention up at the state level, you know, the question of whether these tolls are going to remain permanent or the level or amount of time at which they're going to be enacted.
Right.
At these places, because obviously if you look at New York State to our neighbor in the north there, some of these tolls that have been put up on I-90 originally had said that they were going to have, I believe, like a 7-year expiration date, and they are still in existence today. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, people got to be careful about that.
Right, right. And that, you know, that's a great point you bring up. And that is one of the questions I asked, because I did a piece on this probably about 2 months ago, I think, on just bridge tolling alone, because it's, like you said, it's been a very contentious issue here in Harrisburg. You know, that's the state senator who represents that bridge that we're talking about, you know, came forward and introduced a bill, actually, that would require the General Assembly to approve bridge tolling, because right now with this public-private partnership, PennDOT can sort of move through with this, and they already are. It's already in the, you know, mid to late stages of this process before they start actually doing the construction and everything. So they've been able to move through this process very quickly. And a lot of state lawmakers are upset because they think a bridge toll is kind of almost like a user tax. And any sort of tax has to be approved by the General Assembly. So there's a bit of debate over that, over if PennDOT can just decide to toll bridges and if they should be able to do that in the future or not. And so basically, you know, and like you're saying, it is a critical issue right now. I think there's 25,400 bridges that PennDOT has to maintain across Pennsylvania, and many, many of them are towards the end of their useful life cycle. And that's what PennDOT has told me when we talked about these bridges, those 9 candidate bridges, that they are towards the end of their useful life cycle. I think they're, most of them are 60 some 70 years old, close to, so it is interesting to see, you know, because obviously this is sort of one of those alternative revenue options that PennDOT needs to be able to address this. There's a number of other alternative transportation revenue options. We've heard things about like a mileage-based user fee and that kind of stuff. But as far as the duration of the tolls, I did ask that to PennDOT, like I said, and they said after this 30 years, after that mortgage is paid off, after 30 years, the tolls would come down. So 30 years from now, whether that's the truth or not, we can come back and see. But one of the things that was interesting is that in this current public-private partnership, that P3 law, PennDOT has the authority to raise the tolls over time. So I think at this point, they said it was going to be about $1, $2 for cars. Trucks, they're not sure. And that was another issue of a contentious issue. They're not really sure yet how much trucks are going to pay, but they're probably going to be paying upwards of, you know, 10 to 12, maybe even more. You know, per toll, because obviously they're, you know, they're bigger, they weigh a lot more, they, you know, take a lot more demand on the roadways. So they're definitely going to be a higher toll than cars. But the thing that's interesting is, you know, is how much higher could these tolls get? And, you know, is it okay that PennDOT is sort of has the authority to raise these as they see fit? They told me they don't have any intention to, but they do have the ability to do that. So it's a lot of interesting things in that. We'll probably end up doing another piece, I think, on that soon, because there is a lot to dig into with that.
That is really fascinating. And, you know, that leads me to a question that I've got that people here in the Warren area have been talking about quite a bit. And this relates to the roundabout proposal project that there is for the middle of Warren. Basically, I'm not sure if you're aware, but there's a roundabout project that PennDOT has been working on in the middle of Warren for, I believe, the past several years now. And they're actually getting to the final stages of preparation for the project to get ready to start construction on it. But there's been a lot of pushback from city residents, pushback from the mayor, pushback from people in the city council talking about the impacts of it here in the community. Now, one of the things that's interesting to discuss with this is, you know, how much power does the community have here in wanting to push back on this project, you know, that's already a couple $1 million in development?
You're absolutely right. That's a great question. And I'm not entirely familiar with that roundabout project, but it does get to the bigger issue. PennDOT's obviously a regulatory agency. And with any of these proceedings, especially with that public-private partnership initiative, there is supposed to be public input under that P3 law we were talking about. And I don't know if PennDOT's doing this project, that roundabout project. I doubt that's a P3 initiative, but, right. There is supposed to be public input required, and they're supposed to understand that and hear them, take that input in and those comments. But for example, with this bridging process, Senator Scott Hutchinson out your way, that was one of the things that he told me about this whole process with the bridge tolling, was that it moved incredibly fast. The legislature was not in session to be able to fight this this process in the earlier stages of this, for the bridge tolling. And things kept moving, and up, I think just a few weeks ago, they finalized, I think, the contracting companies that are going to be doing these projects. So the decision's already made. And even here in Harrisburg, there's a bridge not far from where I live, the I-83 bridge that goes over the Susquehanna River, massive bridge. I think it's a $500 or $600 million project. And people here are pretty outraged because a lot of people take that bridge every day, and they're going to be paying a toll if this all is said and done. And you have local lawmakers here, Democrats and Republicans, that are speaking out against this. You have the communities speaking out against this. And it gets to that point of, well, how much, what does the community input and stakeholder engagement, what does that really mean if PennDOT has their mind, if the mind is made to do this? So it's really interesting to kind of see, like you're saying, how much do the voices really matter of those community stakeholders, of those community members? If the minds are made up, and will there be some type of an agreement, of a resolution between PennDOT or between community members that can sort of say, hey, we hear your thoughts, but this is what we're going to do. PennDOT said that they've done economic impact studies to measure the effects that this is going to have, and people using alternative routes instead of these bridges and the influx of traffic flow that's going to create as well. So a lot of different things. And I understand, sort of what you're saying as far as them just kind of wanting to move forward with these issues. Like I said, I'm not entirely familiar with that roundabout project. It is a great point that you bring up as far as...
To live independently, it's something most of us take for granted. But at Lakeshore Community Services, that's what we do for the people we support. Disabilities resulting from intellectual and mental health challenges often inhibit a person from achieving their best life possible. But for 36 years, we've helped people throughout northwestern Pennsylvania have better self-direction, personal worth, and value. Helping people in our community, your family members, friends, and neighbors achieve independence and their best life. We see the amazing in everyone. Lakeshore Community Services.
Community Matters on 92 Gold.
How much does this community voice really matter?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that's important to be able to discuss with this is, obviously when we're looking at the field of candidates that are going to be coming up for election this coming year, looking at the 2022 election season, it's definitely going to be heating up this year. The important things that I wanted to discuss with this is obviously we just had a pretty good chance to talk about the infrastructure and plans that some of these people have for that and what we can do to improve that locally. Now, one of the things that I'm curious about is, where do some of these candidates stand as far as healthcare and as far as gun rights are concerned and stuff like that, because I understand things have been moving around in the legislature in both of those kind of realms recently. So I'm curious to see where they stand.
Right. Obviously from the Democrat side, there are Governor Wolf has pushed a number of different gun safety laws. And over the past 8 years now, a lot of people, especially Republicans, they say that, a Shapiro administration would be sort of a continuation of those policies. Whether that's true or not, we'll have to wait and see. But I do think it's safe to say that there would probably be some more pro-gun rights candidates, obviously, on the Republican side. And that's sort of the standard at any level of government. Specifically, as far as, you know, where they stand individually, you know, I'm not entirely sure what their, you know, what their stance is for particular bills, just because everything they've been talking about recently has been more so, you know, energy independence, fuel price, gas costs, that kind of thing. Education's been a big one too. But I think it is safe to say that a lot of these candidates running are, you know, they're conservative candidates. There's some that are kind of moderate, but they're mostly for the most part, relatively strong conservative candidates. And you know, their stance is, like many conservatives, is pro-gun. It's pro-Second Amendment. So I wouldn't see any restrictive gun laws coming from any of those Republican candidates. But again, that's something that I haven't really dug into as far as each candidate, what their exact stance is on guns. But you know, that would be something that kind of is assumed.
And, you know, that's one of the things that I was curious about, thinking of that, you know, with a slew of Republican candidates on the one side and, you know, really only one expected Democratic contender. Do you think that they're going to have to figure out on the Republican side who they're really going to be having represent them? Or do you think that they're going to end up with a split vote situation?
So I think there are 10 Republican candidates right now. The primary is about, like I said, 5 or 6 weeks away. I don't know if any more candidates are going to drop out before this primary. There have been calls from, you know, Republican senators and other leaders to say, hey, you know, this field is very crowded. You know, we need to start really narrowing down, you know, our best choices going forward. So in other words, like, hey, you know, if you're polling at some of the lowest numbers out of all these 10 candidates, you know, we got to try to sort of clean up here and really present our, you know, but regardless of that, regardless of what happens, the primaries are going to choose one of those 10 candidates. So whoever receives the most votes among Republicans in this May 17th primary, is who's going to ultimately face off against Josh Shapiro, in November in the general election. And I think that's going to be a very interesting election. So regardless of who's elected here in the spring, I think it's going to shape up for a very, very interesting November election. But I think, like, to get back to your point, I think we're going to have to wait and see if any others are going to, you know, drop out at this point. But like I said, we're so close now, and so many of these candidates have invested so much. You know, between fundraising, campaigning, I'm sure you've seen the commercials out your way. There's a lot of them all over the place. So they are so invested and so all in, really, on this race. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of happens over the next 5 or 6 weeks.
Absolutely. So right now it's basically just a waiting game to see when, you know, they'll be able to get that wrapped up and, you know, get someone elected to be in that position for them. And, you know, that we'll have to see, and really we'll have to kind of discuss then at that point, really the way it's going to be shaping up, because at this point right now, it is a little too early in the game to be giving much of a prediction as to what things are going to look like on the political landscape. And, you know, realistically, once we get that, that'll give us a great idea as to where we're going to be looking as far as that goes. And one thing that I did want to mention is, what is the best way for listeners that are catching this program now to keep an up-to-date idea as to what you guys have going on at the Harrisburg Bureau?
I would say, you know, every evening on Erie News Now, usually at 5, sometimes 5:30 and 6, be sure to tune in, because we are always, you know, talking about something new pretty much every day that's happening there. You know, whether lawmakers are in session or not, there's always something happening. There's always, you know, whether it's a regulatory agency like PennDOT or the Department of Health or something like that, or, you know, just new bills coming forward from lawmakers. There's always something happening down here. And it's so important, because, you know, at the state level, that's something that really impacts people's lives on a daily basis. Obviously, you know, from a federal level, it does, but state and local level, I mean, that's something that really makes a difference in people's everyday lives. So to stay up with the latest, obviously, Erie News Now, And as well as ErieNewsNow.com, we have our page with our Harrisburg Bureau, and we have all the stories that you could follow along with there as well. And then also, you know, social media too, Brendan Scanlon TV on Facebook or B Scanlon TV on Twitter, Instagram. I usually try to provide some daily updates as to what we have sort of going on here in Harrisburg on a daily basis.
Awesome. Well, Brendan, thank you for taking the time to join me today to go through this. I'm really glad that we can give all the listeners here in Warren County an insight as to what's going on at the state level here in Pennsylvania. And, you know, you're the person to talk to for that. You've got a pulse on everything that's happening here statewide. So,
yeah. And I'll say too, if any of your listeners or viewers ever have any questions or just want some answers as to things that are happening, please, feel free. I don't know if you could put my Facebook page or even my email in your hard copy for folks to reach out if they do have any questions, concerns, or just want to learn about something. I'm more than happy to connect.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. I'll make sure to tag all that stuff in our thing that I put up as well. So people will be able to check out that on our website, warrenradio.com, and they can view all of those links from there. So Brendan, thank you for taking the time to join me today. I'm glad that we can go through these things. And if you guys are looking for any more information, go to ErieNewsNow.com and check out the Harrisburg Bureau. So that's where you're going to be doing all the reporting from, and that's where you do all the reporting from. So Brendan, thank you for taking the time to join me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Aaron. Great to be with you. I appreciate it as well.
Thank you for listening to Community Matters. If you have any questions, inquiries, or suggestions, feel free to reach out at warrenradio.com and click contact.
Hi, I'm Aaron Mee, and I'm inviting you to tune in to Community Matters Sunday morning starting 8:30 a.m. brought to you by Lakeshore Community Services. Join us as we talk through the issues that matter to you right here in Warren at 8:30 a.m. Sunday morning brought to you by Lakeshore Community Services on Warren's Country Station, 104.3 Kinzu Country.